Major funding for On Point is provided by Liberty Mutual for all your auto, home, life, and business insurance needs. Liberty Mutual. Responsibility. What's your policy?
From WBUR Boston, I'm Tom Ashbrook, and this is On Point, bonus fever, and not in a good way this week. Everybody in the hot seat, the president on Leno, on a fired-up Capitol Hill, New Hampshire Congressman Paul Hodes, renamed AIG.
As far as the American people are concerned, I think AIG now stands for arrogance, incompetence, and greed.
AIG CEO Edward Liddy didn't promise the bonuses, but he delivered them, said he had to.
Do other reasonable people see it in an entirely different way? Yes. Is the American public mad as a hornet about it? Yes. Would I have liked not to have made those payments? Yes.
And last night, President Barack Obama became the first sitting president to appear on late-night TV. Here's Jay Leno.
I'm excited. I'm honored to introduce my first guest, the 44th president of the United States. Please welcome President Barack Obama.
This hour on Point, our weekly news roundtable goes behind the headlines. You can join the conversation. What's the bottom line in the bonus story? Would a 90% tax on those bonuses make you feel better? How about the fresh trillion churned out by the Fed? Joining me now from Washington, D.C. is Margaret Carlson. She's a columnist for Bloomberg News, former White House correspondent for Time magazine. Margaret, great to have you. Thanks for being here.
Hello, Tom. Nice to be here.
Great to have you. With us from New York, Jim Ellis, assistant managing editor at Businessweek magazine. Jim, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And with us from Hanover, New Hampshire, On Point news analyst Jack Beatty, senior editor at the Atlantic Monthly. Hello, Jack.
Hello, Tom, Margaret, and Jim.
How weird was it this week? It started right off weird. On Monday, Senator Chuck Grassley here on radio in Iowa.
The first thing that would make me feel a little bit better towards them, if they'd follow the Japanese example and come before the American people and take that deep bow and say, I'm sorry, and then either do one of two things, resign or go commit suicide.
Go commit suicide. Just kidding, he said, sort of later, but the AIG business said people really in a swivet. Yesterday in Costa Mesa, California, at a town hall meeting, President Obama sort of took the blame, saying it was ultimately his responsibility to fix the problems.
So for everybody in Washington who's busy scrambling trying to figure out how to blame somebody else, just go ahead and talk to me. Because it's my job to make sure that we fix these messes, even if I don't make them. But what's just as important is that we make sure we don't find ourselves in this situation again.
President Obama, yesterday in California, Margaret Carlson began to walk us into this huge imbroglio over bonuses. How do you begin to sort out the bottom line? What does this, what has this all meant, Margaret?
Well, let me go back to Senator Grassley's comment, which was a little over the top. We can all agree, I think.
Just a little.
However, a little falling on the sword might be a good thing. It would have avoided some of this outpouring of fury now that, you know, now our politicians have to cope with, is particularly Obama and the Treasury Secretary, as they have to ask for more money. There seems to be no shame. And had there been some, and had our Treasury Secretary, who knew about the bonuses, looked at it and said, oh, sure, unsophisticated people are going to think this is a problem. That's what people always say to me when I say, oh.
The little people are upset.
Yeah, only unsophisticated people are upset. $165 million, that's chump change compared to the $170 billion that's going out the door. We just have to do this. But it makes people think, listen, we're being held hostage here, and AIG is saying we're going to kill the economy if you don't give us everything we want. And part of what we want is another, the total being $450 million in bonuses. Mm. There's a campaign populism which rings tinny, but there's a genuine form of populism which is operating now, even though it comes with a bit of anger that's disturbing to the people in power.
Jim Ellis, I want to get you on this, but let's listen to just a little bit more of the president on with Jay Leno last night. First time ever we've seen a sitting president on a late night talk show talking about the AIG scandal, the culture of Wall Street, and what he called an attitude of entitlement.
The question is, who in the right mind
when your company is going bust, decides we're going to be paying a whole bunch of bonuses to people. And that, I think, speaks to a broader culture that existed on Wall Street, where I think people just had this general attitude of entitlement, where we must be the best and the brightest. We deserve $10 million or $50 million or $100 million payouts. And you know, the immediate bonuses that went to AIG are a problem, but the larger problem is we've got to get back to an attitude where people know enough is enough.
An attitude of entitlement, enough is enough. Jim Ellis, how do you see this whole great raft of rage this week and the facts beneath it?
It's sort of like you know, the old movie Network, that all of a sudden the American people are saying we're mad as hell and we're not going to take it anymore. And I think that a lot of the politicians have been surprised at the outrage that sort of comes from this. And part of it is that Wall Street is a very different place than Main Street. And I think that a lot of people in Washington really don't know that, even though they always have their hands out to Wall Street people at campaign contribution time. Wall Street is all about money. It's all about what's in it for me. That's both the strength and a weakness. The strength in the sense that people on Wall Street want to make money so badly that it propels, you know, the market to look for the best way to make money and to look for the most efficient ways to you know, raise and use capital. That's a strength of capitalism. It's a bad thing in the sense that it also encourages people to sort of think me and only me. It's great in our kind of society that all those me's together build a strong economy. Unfortunately, it's pretty damn ugly. So what happens is that, you know, we've got this battle between the two, and in a way it makes it look as if those we're not aligned in what our missions are. In other words, people who want to do good go to Washington. People who want to make money go to Wall Street. And Washington has to understand how to channel that if they ever expect to get the financial system back on point. They also have to realize that it's going to be messy, it's going to be ugly, and you're going to have to basically co-opt, you know, the capitalist urges of Wall Street to help us out of this mess.
Jack Beatty, I wonder if it can or will be somehow, yes, all that, but also somehow fundamentally different or not here. All those me's adding up to a strong economy, Jim Ellis says, yeah, we know that line. We heard it for a long time. There were big numbers for a long time, but the numbers are lousy now and we're told likely to get worse. All those me's, that attitude of entitlement did not add up to success, Jack.
Yeah, we never got the we of me. I mean, it was all about me. You know, there are two periods, a recent study points out, when Wall Street salaries were outsized, were really out of the, markedly out of the range of other salaries, the period 1929 to 1932 and the period just ending. It's no coincidence that both periods were times of economic collapse in the financial markets. The high salaries themselves were indexes of people gambling. That's why they were being paid so much money, because they were taking such big chances and they seemed to be getting such big returns. And so I think in a strange way, although I think the Congress went too far with this, looks to me like an ex post facto grab back of trying to of these salaries. Nevertheless, I think that's the right long-term idea, namely a higher taxes on big incomes. David Leonhardt this weekend this week pointed out that one way to discourage this system of the bonuses and the high is to have another tax bracket, something higher. As it is now, the highest tax bracket begins at $347,000.
You're saying have one for the multimillionaire.
Yes, that's what Leonhardt was recommending, and economists are beginning to talk about that as a kind of backstop, so that the bonus system will be discouraged through the tax system.
All kinds of implications of the bonus mess. But Margaret, what about the grab back? The House passing this saying 90% tax on, I think it's, I don't have the details right in front of me, but over a quarter million for companies who got government money. They're going to be in there big time. Jack Beatty says ex post facto grab back may be wrong. How do you see it, Margaret?
Well, you know, they're calling it a bill of attainment. It's unconstitutional, all sorts of things. And this goes to that little piece of Obama from the Leno show that you you played. They discovered it too late. You know, they could have done something about it before that button was pressed and the direct deposit went on March
Friday.
15th, or March 14th. And just to add to Jack's point, the top 50 investment bankers in the country were making 19,000 times what a typical worker was making. It got out of whack. populism only, I think, you know, Phil Gramm called us a nation of whiners during the campaign,
yeah.
and he lost his job for that.
Yeah.
Well, the working and middle class in this country is not at all whiners. You give them a little bit, we're happy. Oh, I can have my job. I can work two shifts. Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm.
And we're... And let this go on. You know, not since the Gilded Age have we seen this income gap until they decided to wreck the whole economy, not just keep people, you know, keep people in the working and middle class with their wages stagnant, but to wreck everything. If they'd noticed when they found out that this bonus business would be a bridge too far, they wouldn't be in the position of having to pass a possibly unconstitutional law in order to do something, because the public's now clamoring for them to do something. I think that, you know, Tim Geithner and others, they saw it and they just said, oh, well, you know, this is just how we're doing business here. This is what happens. And people say, what Jim said, we're not going to take it anymore.
I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. We're looking at a week in the news. Bonus fury. Another trillion from the Fed. Geithner still in the hot seat. And March Madness in college hoops. Thank goodness for a little diversion there. We can use it. Jim Ellis with Business Week magazine is with us today. Margaret Carlson from Bloomberg News, columnist there. Our own Jack Beatty is with us. Jim Ellis, draw a picture for us of how the fury over bonuses is intersecting with the economic reality here. Still lots of bad news from around the world and plenty in this country, despite the stock market putting on a nice blush this week.
I mean, there's a lot of bad news here. I mean, the stock market was up until basically yesterday, simply because a lot of people thought, well, maybe we're hitting a bottom. We had some contradictory numbers. We saw the a little strength in pricing in the economy, which you normally don't get if the economy is flat on its back. So we saw it both in wholesale prices and in consumer prices, some strength there. And we also saw that there was a slight downturn in the number of new first week unemployment claims, and so people were running to say, well, maybe that means that the economy is starting to slow down on the downside, and that maybe not as many people are losing work, and so that's a good thing. But I think that actually was that's a little optimistic. Instead, if you look beneath the numbers, you see that there were still about 5.4 million Americans who were on unemployment benefits. That's a record. I mean, since we started keeping that type of data in the 60s, we've never had that many people drawing unemployment. A lot of people still cannot get credit. A lot of businesses can't get credit to put new people back to work. So there's a lot that still needs to be done. That's one of the dangerous things about this sort of new wave of populism, which is that it's going to make it so much more difficult to actually do some of the things, to make some of the fixes that we need financially. They just can't get passed because so many people are angry over, you know, the foolishness that goes behind bonuses like AIG. And not just the bonuses, but the huge risks that they took for many years with absolutely no financial backing to them.
Things that may not get done, plenty of them stacked up here. Jim, listen with us for a second here to Congressman Paul Kanjorski, Democrat, Pennsylvania, Chairman of the House Financial Subcommittee, hearing out Edward Liddy's testimony, the AIG CEO who was brought in after the deal was made on the bonuses, nevertheless brought in to run the company, told Liddy that his actions would make it hard to get future money from Congress.
Do you realize that the actions that you take at AIG and took in this precise case not only impacts AIG and the potentials of that reality occurring that you describe, but it may have jeopardized our ability to get a majority of this Congress to support further largesse to provide funds to prevent a recession, depression, or meltdown.
Margaret Carlson, what about Barack Obama's hands now? Are they tied by this outrage, by what we saw this week? Does he have the same latitude? Is the Fed's trillion in new money essentially printed and pumped into the economy an acknowledgement that they do not, that the Fed has to take the lead now with its greater latitude?
Well, you know, his comments on Leno showed that he does finally get that he has to identify a little bit with the outrage of you know, your ordinary bloke. What happened was that nobody did, and now, you know, it is going to be harder. You saw politicians, you know, who never lead these days, they picked up the pitchfork. The hearing was just full of posturing by politicians who should have known but didn't and now are on the bandwagon and stoking the anger. I agree with everybody. It could go too far and limit what can be done, but this is what happens when the people in charge don't do the job they're supposed to do. Ben Bernanke, I think, you know, when we look back on the year, this years from now, he may come out as the solid person in all of this. Tim Geithner, at least he's not from Wall Street as Henry Paulson was, but his fingerprints were on the original plan. He constructed the AIG bailout.
With Hank Paulson under George Bush.
And a bailout, by the way, which gave Goldman Sachs a huge benefit, while Henry Paulson, who'd been there, was the Treasury Secretary. Mm. At least Tim Geithner has no conflicts of interest, except that he had his hands in the original bailout, which most people now feel should have had strings attached.
Let's hear from Steve in Boston. Steve, you're on the air.
Yeah, hi. I wanted to say a couple of things. First of all, for my own situation, I met all the requirements for my fourth quarter bonus last year,
okay.
But the board voted against it, and none of us got our bonuses. And in January, due to the economy, my program was canceled, and I'm without a job. So my view on these bonuses is pretty extreme. I don't think any should have been paid out, and the fact that our Congress let this bailout bill go through that allowed them to get paid these enormous amounts of money after failing is ludicrous. I just don't see how the American people can vote for one of the Congress people.
Your bonus got stopped. They got it anyway, and Congress let it happen, and not just Congress. Jim Ellis, though, in all of this, I mean, we hear Steve's pain, but also his outrage. But in all of this, I'm looking back on the bonuses of, I don't know, the last decade now. They were so enormous. They were paid on these illusory profits from the same bad deals that we're all paying for now. I mean, it seems ironic that there's all this outrage now, but when they were even much bigger, for all those years, these politicians were taking campaign contributions, not whacking anybody's knuckles here, not calling anyone to account, Jim.
It wasn't just that they were taking campaign contributions, which they loved to do, but also they were sort of raising these people up on a platform and saying, this is what America stands for. This is, you know, proof that the American system works. I mean, one of the things that strikes me by this whole affair is what we're seeing now with the public and this repudiation of market dominance, or in other words, the primacy of the marketplace, which has been a big piece of the sort of American psyche since the Reagan years, really.
Yeah.
I mean, putting up that, you know, we are great because we can, you know, use the free market to, you know, grab great wealth and lead the world. And, you know, and that shows that we're better than everyone else. And that's sort of what we ought to do. I think now we're also seeing that there's an ugly flip side to market dominance, which is not just that markets go up and down, but that markets in and of themselves always have to be unequal.
But in people's outrage over these overshoots and excesses, you know, it seems to me the question is, will we get the right balance in the end here? Everything seems up for grabs right now. Let's get a call from Toronto, Canada. Matt, you're on the air.
Yes. Hi, Tom. Great show. I wondered, with this $1 trillion infused in the economy, if this is really kind of a, you know, corporate welfare or corporate socialism for the super rich.
You mean the latest trillion from the Fed that gets pumped out the door, that's being pumped out the door now?
That's right, sir. Mm-hmm. And I wondered if how is America going to get back to just free market economic principles without having these huge bailouts being pumped into the system? When will, or if, will the government ever withdraw again from running Wall Street?
Yeah, Jack Beatty, how do you see it? What's the new rudder under all of this? More trillions right now. Maybe Ben Bernanke says that's still Keynesian. We still need that to prop up on all sides, plus deal with toxic assets and all the rest. But how do we, you know, what's the sort of, center of gravity that we rebalance on here, Jack? Does anybody have any idea right now?
Well, I think we're going to find out in coming weeks when the president announces his new regulatory scheme. He talked about it some on Jay Leno last night. And you know, he was making the point that a lot of what we took to be prosperity was really a hectic kind of shuffling of paper. And he says we have to get back to real prosperity. Prosperity, in his eyes, based upon a new and green economy. He really sees that as the economic foundation. And on top of that, he says we need a financial regulation to protect consumers and the vulnerable. And I think he's got that figured out right. I wish, however, and I think the administration might wish, that they had come out earlier with their reform plan on regulation. It's been long developing, and I think that would have given a measure of confidence right out of the gate. As it is, it's dragged on, and now next week we're going to get the bank plan, the plan on what to do about these toxic assets, and we're still a few weeks away from the regulation. I think we need to start hearing about that regulation now to give us confidence looking forward.
Margaret Carlson, how about it? You've said you'd like to see a little more Dirty Harry from President Obama, but how tough is it going to be for the president, for Timothy Geithner, to sort of hit the bullseye on this new banking program expected next week?
Well, as he said, this poor Geithner fellow has so much on his plate, not since the Depression. Or I think he compared him to Alexander Hamilton, has a Treasury secretary had more to do. You know, this took years to come to pass, and it's going to take, unfortunately, years to fix it, because the regulatory apparatus we had more or less collapsed. And you have to look back to President Clinton and doing away with Glass-Steagall Act as part of this. It's not all Republicans under Bush in the last few years. You know, it seems like a year ago now, but it was just Monday when President Obama was at the White House and made fun of himself being angry. He cleared his throat.
I'm choked up with anger.
Right. And I mean, the time for irony is over. Thank goodness he didn't go on David Letterman, but chose Leno instead. But this, you know, the rebuilding that has to be done needs to be done with people who are as so-called smart as the people who got us into this. I mean, part of the retention bonus, which, you know, is galling as well, is only the people who got us into this can get us out of this. There's nobody quite that smart. Well, they're not that smart. Look what happened. Yeah. And the idea that you that this is what annoys people is that you have to keep these very people. I am sure that we can find public service people in this country who are as clever and as smart and ingenious as the people who got us into this, who want to set up a new system that can kind of keep pace with capitalism. I mean, capitalism got all out of whack over the last 20 years, the last five in particular, with these new instruments. Can't we get, under this administration, people smart enough to stay a step ahead? You know, the cops need to stay a step ahead of the robbers.
Let's get a call from Charleston, South Carolina, and Nickel. Nickel, you're on the air.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
I'm absolutely aghast with the way that Congress has handled this, as well as the way that the business people have handled this. It's upsetting to me that our politics right now is completely reactionary, and I think it's our fault as the American people for electing the people we do, who continue to react, just as they did 8 years ago with the Patriot Act, coming in right away, not thinking about future consequences. They've done that in their economic policies over the past 20 years, and they are as much at fault as the people on Wall Street or in the financial industry.
Reactionary, you say. Nickel, let us look at that. But Jack Beatty, when Barack Obama lays out a great big agenda, a forward-looking agenda, a lot of people, including some Democrats, are saying, too much, Mr. President.
They are saying too much. And I think what we need to do is step back just for a second and take in the audacity of Barack Obama's ambition. You know, the New Deal came in stages. There was the first stage of 1933 into 1934 of emergency stuff for the, on the banking system, unemployment. That was the first New Deal. Then there was a hiatus. Then in 1935-36 came the second New Deal. Really, that was an effort to deal with the thunder on the left, with Huey Long, with the threat from the left in America. We got the Wagner Act on unions. Mm. We got Social Security. We got the big reforms. And in between, in 1934, we got the Securities and Exchange Commission, the redoing of the regulations of Wall Street. Well, what Barack Obama is doing this year or trying to do is all three. We're getting the first New Deal, the emergency stimulus, and then we're getting banking regulation, and we're going to get more emergency money for the banks, and we're getting the second New Deal coming up in this budget. We're getting health care, we're getting energy, we're getting education. That's what he's doing, and no president, I think, has ever tried to do so much so fast. Is it too much? I don't know. I mean, I think the political people are right when they say you've got to do it in that first year, because if you don't, the inertia in the system just begins to work against you. And I think that, you know, what we're seeing here is truly unprecedented.
Jim Ellis, too much, too fast, more than a president can take on and hope to have a prayer of succeeding with?
It's probably too much, but the challenge he has is that he could remain focused and say, I'm going to concentrate on one thing. Unfortunately, if you did that, that one thing would probably be the financial bailout, since much more can't be done if that fails. But he can't do that politically. So what happens is he throws out stimulus, bank reform, health care reform, green jobs, education. And the second thing that's going there is, besides making people think, okay, he's making some progress on the things that I voted for him for, he's also saying, I recognize that after another year, people are going to suddenly sit back and say, we have a $1.7 trillion deficit. Mm. You guys can't spend anymore. And so what you haven't gotten sort of rolling along and gotten people behind and willing to spend money on in this first year is not going to get done in this first term. The deficits are going to be stunning. People are not going to want Washington to spend any more of their money.
They are right now. $2 trillion, the Congressional Budget Office is saying.
Right.
Margaret Carlson, Margaret, what do you make of his pace then? Is he right to push it all right now? This is his one big shot. You go, President Obama, or slow down? Do the banking business first, come back. What do you say?
Well, historically, if you don't do it first, you don't do it at all. There's that. There's the matter that, you have a calendar. Fixing the economy is on one track. You can't say, oh, if he only does that, that's going to happen faster. I don't think so. The people on the Hill who are complaining about energy and healthcare in particular are the people who would never be in favor of it under any circumstances.
Right. So of course it's too much.
Yes, of course it is.
They're not going to be happy if he pushes it slow. If he pushes it fast, boy.
If he pushes it at all.
But Jackie, I mean, you may be right. Boy, be ambitious, but or sir, be ambitious. But that is a lot. It's a lot to push in 1 year.
It is, and already you can see the backwash. I mean, we had, what, 8 Democrats signed a letter this week to him saying, Mr. President, do not put your budget through under reconciliation, which would mean it wouldn't be subject to filibuster. It would only be subject to, can you imagine anything so revolutionary, majority vote. And they're warning him, don't do that. Now, what's behind that? Margaret, do you have any read on what these people are thinking, led by Evan Bayh?
Well, I'll say this. If you're going to have an opponent in the Senate, or what looks like one, let it be Evan Bayh, who, is the Ken doll of the Senate and handsome, reasonable, kind of gentle in his demeanor.
Margaret, hold the thought. We're right up against a break here. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point. College hoops, a tragic death, and joy in Pakistan this week. Sweet relief from all the news as March Madness kicks off. Texas A&M beat Brigham Young 79-66 last night in Philadelphia.
There's Davis for the stick back.
What a tip. Part of that's concentration. The other part of it is the shot blocking ability of Texas A&M.
A fall on a bunny slope leaves Tony Award-winning actress Natasha Richardson dead. Here she is once more with Dennis Quaid in The Parent Trap.
Come on, Nick, what do you expect? To live happily ever after?
Yes. To all the above. Except you don't have to cry hysterically.
Oh, yes, I do.
And celebration in Pakistan after huge protests see that country's chief justice restored to the bench. We're looking at a week in the news. Bonus fury, another trillion from the Fed, and Geithner still in the hot seat. March Madness, too. And yes, the president really out there this week on a lot of fronts, even on NCAA March Madness basketball with his brackets, his selections for who's going to win what at the White House with ESPN. Top pick, University of North Carolina, Tar Heels.
The Tar Heels that are watching, I picked you all last year. You let me down. This year, don't embarrass me in front of the nation. All right? I'm counting on you. Appreciate it.
The Duke coach didn't like that so much. The president having a little fun there. But, Margaret Carlson, bring us back. Does the president have a little rebellion in his own party? You were talking about Evan Bayh. There's pushback here, not just from Republicans these days.
No, and they call themselves moderates. It might be a little like the Gang of 14 on the judicial nominations, although so far there are no Republicans in it except for Joe Lieberman.
Quote, unquote. Mm-hmm.
What makes me think it won't be that radical is that Senator Claire McCaskill is in the group, and there's no bigger supporter of President Obama on the Hill than Senator Claire McCaskill. They use words like pragmatic, practical, fiscally responsible. They're coming in to, quote, help break the gridlock in Washington and have a responsible budget. They're a little like the blue dogs over in the House, fiscally conservative. I don't know how successful they'll be. Certainly, Senator Conrad, the Budget Committee chair, has said he's not happy with the spending in the budget. Heck, the White House isn't happy with the spending in the budget. We don't have the money. You know, we're printing money. You know, when you talked about the $1 trillion going out for Ben Bernanke, you know, I have two questions every day. Where are they printing it? Where's it coming from? And then my second question is, by the way, where did my money go?
Meaning what?
Like, you don't know. It's like all this wealth, $1 trillion or $3 trillion, I think, has disappeared from people's personal retirement funds and savings. But where is it? Who has, you know, it's just poof. It's gone. I think ordinary people say, wait, do those AIG people have it?
It's out there in the money sphere, Margaret. Jamelis,
yeah.
We hear they don't even have to print it anymore. It's just type a number into the machine, punch the button, and it's in the system. But what about inflation on the other side of this, Jamelis? I mean, is this the scenario where the United States gets rid of its debt by reducing the value of the dollar, essentially, and letting inflation eat up those obligations?
Well, that's certainly the worry right now of China. I mean, we saw last weekend that Premier Wen Jiabao of China said, guys, we're your largest creditor. We've loaned you a lot of money. I mean, right now the Chinese are sitting on top of, I guess, about $2 trillion in foreign exchange reserves. About two-thirds of that's in dollar-denominated assets, and about $1 trillion of that is in U.S. Treasury debt. They're saying, you're printing money. This is, you know, making us wonder about the strength of our investment in the U.S. The administration's done backflips to try to say, no problem there. We'll keep this together, and we have no choice. And also, we're so intricately linked right now, you can't afford for us to go down. But that is an issue. I actually think, though, that inflation is next year's problem. It's the year after that. It will be nice if we can get to inflation as a problem, because for that to happen, it means that we have to get the economy back on point. And I actually think that this latest round of money that the Fed's throwing out there, the $300 billion in Treasury purchases and the $750 billion in additional mortgage-backed securities, that actually maybe makes a little bit more sense. And we've already seen some impact from it, I mean, for regular people.
Mortgage rates down.
Mortgage rates went down. I mean, this is what happens. This is what the original plan was back in the late days of the Bush administration, which is maybe if we start taking some of this toxic paper off the books of banks, it might have an impact on, you know, mortgage rates and on regular consumer rates. Now, that's why you're hearing so much more from the administration to talk about, you know, the TALF. I hate to use these things, but, you know, which is the new
successor
plan
to TARP.
The successor to TARP. But this one actually doesn't just bail out banks. This one actually puts money into consumer loans, auto loans, you know, student loans, the things that actually help us as opposed to TARP, which basically helped bank shareholders and bank, you know, debt holders, and didn't do a lot for as nearly as much for average people. And so this latest round of money actually does help a bit more of the average American.
So maybe a balm for a bigger number. Let's get a call from Michigan, West Bloomfield. Steve, you're on the air, Steve.
Hi, Tom.
Hi.
One of the questions I have is, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about who knew about these bonuses at AIG and when they knew about them. That's kind of irrelevant to me. Even if there's contracts that mandate these bonuses, I'm a member of the United Auto Workers, and I'm about to lose my job because the United Auto Workers were forced to renegotiate their contract.
Right.
So why can't these contracts be opened up and this money just be taken away from them without having to go through the process of writing a tax law that's going to recoup it that way?
Yeah, well, yeah. What about that, Margaret? Somebody said it was all discovered too late, but I've seen story after story this week, you know, saying it was kind of known from the get-go. Christopher Dodd, senator from Connecticut, having to get out there in a big way and say, oh, I didn't put the loophole in that made this happen. The administration put the pressure on for that, you know, all the way back, I guess, in the fall, but then right on through in recent weeks. It wasn't a complete mystery, despite the fact that maybe President Obama didn't know about it.
Not at all. In fact, Bloomberg News reported in January on the $450 million bonuses. You know, I am a lawyer, but I rarely play one on the radio. But I will say this about the contracts. They're renegotiated all the time, change circumstances. And in the case of AIG, I think you just say, you know, there are provisions where it's, you know, it's against the common weal. It's against the common good to be rewarding people for, you know, bad behavior. And on the other side, do you really... The name retention bonus was developed during our own Gilded Age, when the people at the top of the heap of investment bankers, they no longer wanted to tie their bonuses to performance.
So it was just to keep them hanging around.
Yes, just to hang around whether or not you're succeeding. So I think those are against the public interest, even, you know, in times when we're not have to paying for. To pay for their sins. But, you know, just ask the auto workers, as the caller says, they've had to renegotiate everything because of changed circumstances. You know, the problem is that the people in charge looked at this and didn't see it. And it shows the attitude over these past 10 years or so, which is why ordinary taxpayers and workers are so upset is, look how far it went before these guys got onto it.
And still willing to take it straight out of the hide of taxpayers in this latest round of bonuses, if necessary, to keep it coming.
As Jim Ellis said, you know, that movie, we're just not going to take it anymore.
Yeah. Carl in Nashville, Tennessee, you're on the air, Carl.
Hi.
Hi.
Well, happy spring. We're going to clean.
Yes, first day of spring. Good.
First day of spring. Listen, I guess I'm not upset. I'm outraged, since that's the word of the week. I'm outraged that people will sit and say that our president is doing too much. Unbelievable. How can your president, how is doing too much to try and help the situation a bad thing? And another thing that I'm having a problem with, conservatives and Republicans in particular, is that they glorify Ronald Reagan as the great communicator. And one of the things that they glorify about him the most and put him up on a pedestal the most is that he spoke directly to the people. Now, when a Democrat president does that, it's a problem. You can't go talk to the people. Unbelievable, the hypocrisy right there.
Yeah, it's interesting, Carl. It's true. Go on Leno, and some people have pulled a long face at that. On the other hand, Jack, it's kind of like our equivalent of the fireside chat, is it not?
It certainly is, and anyone who watched it, I mean, first of all, he was charming and witty, but also he was lucid and intelligent, and he was bringing before people the challenges. We have near-term challenges, and he said, we're going to get through those, but we have to, on the other side, come out with more broadly shared prosperity, and in order to realize that, we have to make structural changes, his big reform program in energy, healthcare, and education. So it was an educative moment. I mean, Franklin Roosevelt said a president is an educator or he is nothing. And I think for all the jokes and the badinage with Leno, the president was an educator last night.
An educator right there. But he's got problems raging outside that studio, including calls now for Timothy Geithner to be booted as Treasury Secretary. Here's Florida Republican Representative Connie Mack calling for Geithner's removal Wednesday, talking here to Fox News.
I think he's lost the confidence of the American people, and I think he's lost the confidence of Congress, and I'm sure that the administration, although they're not saying it publicly, are scratching their head. And, you know, I just think that there's, with this loss of confidence, people are just scratching their head saying, what is happening in Washington? Why are these bonuses being paid? This is an outrage. And I think he ought to either resign or the administration ought to let him go.
Big tests right in front of us for Timothy Geithner, the president, saying on Wednesday on the South Lawn of the White House that he is completely behind Mr. Geithner.
I have complete confidence in Tim Geithner and my entire economic team. Understand, as I said before, Tim Geithner didn't draft these contracts with AIG. There has never been a Secretary of the Treasury, except maybe Alexander Hamilton, right after the Revolutionary War, who's had to deal with the multiplicity of issues that Secretary Geithner's having to deal with, all at the same time.
The President on his Treasury Secretary. Margaret Carlson, give us some insight on Timothy Geithner. He looks so often like a deer in the headlights that he's got a reputation as a real genius. What's the balance of talents and weaknesses here?
Well, I wrote a column about the inside man and the outside man in Washington. Tim Geithner falls into the inside man category.
Meaning?
Where he's very smart, by all accounts. People who support him, people who don't support him, he's very smart. But he does not convey confidence when he is publicly talking about the economy. A big part of the Treasury job, historically, is to convey that confidence. Robert Rubin was able to do it. There are a lot of things now about Rubinomics we don't like, but when he went out onto those marble steps of the Treasury, markets were calmed. President Obama said one thing there that's troublesome. He said Tim Geithner didn't write those contracts with AIG. His fingerprints are all over the AIG bailout. I mean, it's easy to fire somebody in the world we live in, and it buys you some time, and I don't recommend it as the easy way out. But unfortunately, he was in cahoots with Paulson. He was at the New York Fed. He was in on it. And he was said to have been the guy staying up all night working, constructing the AIG bailout and its terms. When he saw the bonuses, he wasn't alarmed. He didn't see it. He didn't get that this could be the thing, the proverbial straw that breaks the camel's back.
But he said, we're told that he went to Edward Liddy and said, no, too much, got to stop this, and wasn't able to do it.
Well, but he couldn't do it because it was too late. You can't go to Edward Liddy, who, by the way, came across as a solid guy in those hearings.
Yeah.
He took a lot of abuse.
Yes, he did.
For things he didn't do. Tom, it was too late to do anything. One of the, politicians with the pitchforks, I don't know whether it's a congressman or a senator, said, oh, let's, this is what you do when a car mechanic does something bad. Oh, let's stop payment on those checks. Mm. Well, they went by direct deposit. That money's gone. And by the way, when Ed Liddy said, oh, let's get back half of it, well, why not get back all of it? I mean, these things that are being thrown around now are way too late. No one saw it in time. Now you have an angry public. It limits what the public officials can do going forward. And if it's true that we need these people, we can't get out of this without them, then, you know, the anger has to be tamped down and it has to be constructive. And I think Obama did a good job on Leno in reaching the public because, you know, in good times, the public isn't hanging on every word coming out of Washington.
Mm.
So I think our public officials do have to go to places like Leno.
Find a new angle to
get it out. And you can be sure Leno's not the type that's going to ask the embarrassing question.
It was
a good place to go, although he did make a terrible mistake. And since I have a disabled brother, I didn't like it when he said his bowling was it could get him into the Special Olympics.
Apologies for that later. But there it was on Leno. Jim Ellis, we've just got 30 seconds here. But Geithner, in a word, you're in New York. Is he seen as a short timer or the president's behind him? He's likely to stay right there.
I mean, so far, the president has been sort of rock solid behind him. But more importantly, he's one of the few people who actually understands all the moving parts of the bailout. TARP, TALF, all the things that the Fed is doing. And the Fed and the mixture between Fed and Treasury is such an important part of this. You've got to have somebody there. For now, at least, it looks as if he's needed.
So, Timothy Geithner, hanging in for the moment, we'll see. Jim Ellis, great to have you with us today from New York, Assistant Managing Editor at Businessweek Magazine. Welcome to spring, Jim, and thank you for joining us today.
Thanks, Tom.
Margaret Carlson at Bloomberg News. Wonderful to have you, Margaret, as always. Thanks for joining us.
Great. Thanks so much, Tom.
Jack Beatty, have a good weekend, sir.
Thank you.
Listeners, before wrapping up, I'm asking for your help. We're working on a show for next week about people who have lost their jobs in the economic downturn and how they're coping, what plan B they've found. If that's you, we'd love to hear from you. Hear your story at our website, onpointradio.org. Under notes and updates, you'll find a way to reach us. I look forward to hearing your story, your plan B, how you're coping. You can continue the conversation and download the On Point podcast at our website, onpointradio.org. I'm Tom Ashbrook. This is On Point.